I'm Tom Wilmer reporting from downtown San Luis Obispo. Right now we're at Luna Red, a restaurant right in the edge of Mission Plaza, and we're here with
Shani Covey.
And Shani, you own Luna Red, right?
I co-own Luna Red with my business partner and ex-husband Robin Covey.
And
Samantha Payette. Work with Robin and Shani with their management company as their director of culture and talent development.
The reason I'm here has everything to do with making it in San Luis Obispo. There is a shortage of workers, and yet it's still painfully tough for the worker to make it.
Absolutely. Over the past year in particular, we have definitely seen a shortage of back-of-the-house labor, which is cooks, dishwashers, prep, even chefs. It's been the applicants are few and far between. It's hard to find quality workers. I think that people are less inclined to work in the kitchen than they used to be.
But even front of the house, servers and hostesses and hosts, that's a different dynamic, but yet the same thing, isn't it?
Yes, and especially in Cambria, we have seen also that the applicants for front of the house have definitely dwindled. I think in San Luis Obispo, because it's a college town, there still doesn't seem to be a shortage of applicants, but maybe less qualified applicants in the sense of veteran servers, you know, veteran house, front of the house people, there probably is less of, yeah.
Even though there's a shortage of workers, and so there's that demand on that one side, you know, come to work, we need you. Yet, I know, we all know, people who work as servers or hostesses or hosts, many of them have relied on tips to make that game-changing difference in their lives. And the world of tipping is changing as we're speaking.
Yeah, absolutely. The world of tipping is completely kind of being turned on its head right now as we continue to see a rise in minimum wage for entry-level workers, with minimum wage due to go up to $15 an hour at the end of next year, beginning of next year. Then we're looking at full-time staff, our front-of-house staff that typically runs at minimum wage but makes a majority of their income in gratuities. So in the last several years, we've seen that rise in minimum wage from $8.25 when I first moved to California all the way up to where it will be at $15. So I was a server making $8 an hour but making, you know, anywhere from $30 to $40 an hour in gratuities on top of that. So did pretty well. We just don't have the luxury of being able to share that gratuity with the back-of-the-house workers. So it becomes a lot more difficult to maintain that back-of-the-house labor pool.
They're not getting the benefit of the tips.
They're not getting their California legislation doesn't allow them to share in the tip pool.
But I know historically, I know restaurant owners and restaurant management that at least used to do that to make it more equitable. That's really bizarre what's happened.
Yeah. So definitely it's a disadvantage to the back of the house, you know, because they contribute to the guest experience as much as the front of the house does. So we are looking for ways to try to bridge that gap between their wages.
Any ideas?
You know, actually as a team, we've been trying to look to the cities that have had to make these decisions sooner than we have. So we've been looking up towards San Francisco, up to Seattle, and throwing out the idea of moving to either a service charge model rather than volunteer tipping. Then it's simply a service charge at the end, which is roughly what a guest would pay towards a gratuity anyway. Mm-hmm. But then we have the ability to be able to share that with the back of the house once it's a service charge.
Because it's no longer a tip.
Because it's no longer a tip.
Well, that sounds like a real pain-free, simple solution.
It does. Where it becomes a little bit challenging is, since servers are typically accustomed to getting anywhere 18 to 20%, if we do a 20% service charge, it really doesn't change the front of the house, but it doesn't leave a lot of money left over to be able to contribute towards the back of the house. So we're looking at the possibility of a surcharge model.
If you did a surcharge model, for me as a motivated server, there's going to be a dilution of my net. Because you're now sharing my front of the house tip with back of the house.
Yeah, and absolutely. And I think either way, if we were to move to a service charge model, then we're risk losing a lot of our service staff because we would be the first in the county to do it. And so we're not quite sure the community's ready for it. We're not quite sure that our staff would be ready for it. I know our teams, they're actually a little bummed that they can't necessarily include the back of the house in the tip pool anymore because they really do feel that they're part of the team and contributing to the guest experience, so they would like to see that change as much as we would.
Any pulse beat on the theoretical reaction of your clientele when they come in and now there's this, like a resort fee at a resort? To me, as I see it, there's nothing wrong with it because it's disclosed and it's up front and you know.
If we go with a surcharge or a service charge, we will have to disclose it. There has to be complete transparency to the guests, and it can't just be in fine print in the bottom of a menu. They have to know.
Yeah. But you would definitely want to do that.
Yes, absolutely.
To keep the optimal perception of your business.
Yeah. Yes, we want people to know and be educated as to really, you know, the challenges that a restaurant, as a restaurant owner, we face, you know, in fairly compensating our staff.
Totally agree with that. One, we've had guests coming to restaurants for 30 some odd years, 38 years at Robbins, and people that come back almost every single week, so it would definitely be a surprise to them. The great news is the majority of the community is really supportive of being able to provide fair wages, and I think a lot of people that have ever dipped their toe into being a restaurateur or worked in a restaurant understand that margins are incredibly slim.
They really are. It's what, like, average restaurant net 4% or something like that?
National average is 5%. So if you think of a quick service restaurant like McDonald's, where they're making more money than a full service dining restaurant, so that takes the average into consideration, which is pretty extreme. 5%, not a lot of people choose to go into a business where they're only going to make an average of 5% profit margin. Every little bit counts. Every penny counts in the restaurant industry, especially when it comes to wages. So the surcharge model does allow us the flexibility to maybe not creep prices up, which I think a lot of restaurateurs, in order to pay for higher wages, we've got to raise prices. Money has to come from somewhere, which again just helps increase the front of house wages because the prices go up. That 20% is now a higher denomination plus their wage is going up. So if we go the surcharge route, doing like anywhere between a 3% and a 6% surcharge at the end of the check, then we can put that into an account that will be fully transparent to go directly to back of the house workers.
And again, if you have a loyal repeat clientele customer, whether it's Robbins or Novo or Luna Red, and they come back again and again, it follows that they're probably decent tippers. And it follows that they're going to do the math and understand that it's a net wash in the end, correct?
Yes, that's true. And I think with the surcharge, you know, that the guest will have the option of, you know, maybe leaving less of a tip of the 18 to 20% tip and knowing that they have a 3 to 5% surcharge, you know, on the end. I don't know. You know, we're hoping that our guests will trust us in knowing that we really are not trying to get more out of them, but it's for a specific reason, for the sustainability of our business, which I'm sure that they want us to continue to be here.
Right. And again, that equanimity between front of the house and back of the house.
Yes, right. And that's the biggest drive. You know, that's what our goal is to try to make it so our back of the house can have a sustainable wage, and every wage increase that's happening in the state is not going all directly just to the front of the house.
Interesting. Have you had a pulse beat from other restaurateurs in the area and what their feelings are?
I know that they are feeling it. Every restaurateur is feeling the pinch of minimum wage increases, but not just minimum wage increases, but also other mandates that we've had to that have come our way in the last couple of years.
For example?
Mandatory, if you're large enough, you know, mandatory insurance, health insurance, and then there's the sick leave law that was passed just about a year ago or so, you know, a three-day sick leave. So those are all, have
real costs.
Impacted our bottom line, yeah.
I think the restaurant business is so cool. You can't buy a restaurant experience online. That's one thing that we've really got going for us in the restaurant business, and I think one of the things that I love so much about it is because it's one thing that cannot be outsourced. people will always want to come in for an experience, and we want to be able to continue to provide that.
Yeah, absolutely. There's the energy in a restaurant is nothing like no other business, and that's, you know, the joy and the reward that you have from seeing happy people, and you know, and enjoying themselves when they have a great guest experience is really, you know, it really keeps us going.
It's hard because we're already put into a position where we're raising prices because our vendors are experiencing the same things that we are. So the farmers market prices are going up. We buy most of our produce from the farmers market, so their labor prices are going up, which means that our Brussels sprouts prices are going up.
Well,
so
really
it
becomes a net zero, in a sense. You're just trying to keep even where you were.
Right, exactly. It's like, you know, prices go up. The parking downtown prices go up $20 a month now. So everything's just kind of on this upswing, at least in this area. And I think that's the great part about San Luis Obispo is we are absolutely a growing and thriving community. And these are the challenges that come with that.
Yes, definitely. So, you know, we have to just by inflation, you know, you're going to expect that prices will just have to go up every year just to keep abreast of costs that are going to naturally go up. But to raise our prices enough to cover an increase in back of the house to make their wages sustainable is going to be a sticker shock for the guest. So, which is why we feel that a surcharge would be a better transition. You know, I think that overall that the restaurant and hospitality industry is going to eventually have to have really do a turnaround in how they're charging for things and how they're paying people.
Okay, so if I come in here a year from now and I walk in, there's a note, there's a surcharge for your dinner, is it then communicated that you do not have to tip or you're no longer expected to tip? Or do people still envision them tipping on top of the surcharge anyway?
If it's a surcharge that we're adding, which is anywhere from 3-6%, then yes, they will still be expected to tip. Like that wouldn't change. That expectation won't change.
You have to communicate that.
Yes. Yes, absolutely. And, you know, for some people, you know, they have the option of maybe decreasing their tip, but they still will be expected to tip.
Right. Yeah. So maybe they net zero at their 20% or whatever in the end, and they do the math.
Yes, that's going to be up to them.
Yeah, gratuity has always been at the discretion of the client. We don't put suggested gratuities at different percentages on the bottoms of our checks or anything. So I think people still want to take care of and compensate the staff if they feel that they were treated exceptionally well, which we definitely put a lot of effort into training our staff to do that. Hopefully they won't be impacted too much by that decision.
Very illuminating. Thank you guys for sharing.
Oh, thank you for having us.
Thank you.
And my name is Shani Covey from Robin's Restaurant and et al.
et al. And I'm Samantha Payette with Blue Mango Management Services.
Cool. Samantha, to learn more about Luna Red and Robin's, do you have a website?
Yeah, you can visit any of the restaurants, novorestaurant.com, lunaredslow.com, mintandcraft.com, and robinsrestaurant.com.
I'm Tom Wilmer, reporting from the heart of downtown San Luis Obispo at Luna Red, right next to the Old Mission.
You've been listening to the Lowell Thomas award-winning travel show Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer, a featured podcast on NPR.org's podcast directory. Produced by California Central Coast NPR affiliate KCBX. You are invited to subscribe to Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer on NPR.org, NPR One, iTunes, Stitcher.com, and more than 20 other podcast channels around the world.
Underwriting support for Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer is provided in part by the Society of St. Vincent de Paul. People often associate the Society of St. Vincent de Paul with thrift stores. Donations like clothing, your gently used couch, or still serviceable washing machine generate funds to assist the Society in putting food on the table for people in need, or keeping the lights on and families in their homes. To find a St. Vincent de Paul thrift store in your area, visit svdpusa.org. Once again, svdpusa.org. And whether you're shopping for new or used items, donating them, or volunteering, you're helping the Society of St. Vincent de Paul help others.